ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week is part two with Coach Greg and Megan. And if you take a listen to this, you're running a deep dive into more conversations. So I'm going to start this chat and let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I was going to talk about Amadeo.
Oh man, that's a great example.
Yeah.
That's a great example. But I was talking about Cali earlier this week.
No, but it never ceases to amaze me whenever you got a player like this last week, a new kid came in town. I think they were from Chicago, were they, Megan?
Michigan.
He was on Liverpool Academy and they signed up for a session that was 2 years older than them. And I was, this is a mixed match.
Let's give a little context. He's a 2018, which is really young, a 6-year-old. Signs up for a 2016. Which there is a massive difference between your 2018s and your 2016s. And he shows up and he is taller. So Greg didn't, I knew he was a 2018.
I was thinking to myself, this is like, for me, I was like, surely this is not the case. Plus, I'm also thinking North Texas, the level of North Texas, from what I've seen over time, I would play any other sort of teams is it when I was coaching club. Normally, the level of North Texas was pretty high comparatively. The other areas, and this kid came in and was absolutely phenomenal. Could strike a ball like a 2013-year-old.
Phenomenal.
It was unbelievable. So it's like when you get like little moments like that, it is just a reminder that like this game, like some kids just have such natural talent, and it can be always an anomaly of this kid is just, he should be in a class with players that are 2-3 years older than him. And it was always incredible to see. And also very dedicated, this kid as well. Sometimes you get a kid where sometimes maybe they have got a lot of physical attributes that they can play up, but when you have the mind side of it too, and they're like ready to learn, they're ready to, and they process the information, and you can see it from some technical corrections that they then implemented. It's incredible to me.
Can you also go back to, again, the holistic viewpoint of the child? So you can have a younger, like a 2018 like this, where his skill and his talent is there. But if we do try to put him in too far up, then we're still human. So we operate on our own cognitive, psychological levels, learning differences, learning where you're at. There's, when you go into that leveling, there's also that. You may have a really skilled player, but they may be a very typical 8-year-old, but they're a little immature or a little more playing around or a little more, they're really good, but you still have to watch where you place some of these kids based on where they are developmentally. That's not always soccer related. And we've seen that in sessions quite a bit too. So you may have the skill, but where are you developmentally? Are you focused? Are you paying attention? Where are you? And some of it comes down to just, this is your age. You're an 8-year-old, you're a 7-year-old, you're still having fun, but you're not as streamlined on it. Another thing that I think is important to talk about that I really would like for us to be able to put out there is we really are interested in the player who wants to be there. In North Texas, there's a massive amount of parents who just want their kid to be the best. So they're going to say, okay, you did not play good in your game on Saturday. We're going to find any trainer, training facility, anything that's going to take you. When they come to us and they're not putting it in, we're not interested. And I don't want that to sound terrible.
Yeah. I'm going
to
be on them, you know?
Your kid needs to want it more than you as the parent. And that is sometimes a difficult conversation for us to have to go back to the parent and say, you want this really bad, but your child's out there not paying attention. And you know what? I can fully say this. I have a 14-year-old daughter. Half the time she's like, she's got all the opportunity in the world to be there. But I have to say to her, I'm not letting you come to these sessions if you're not into it. End of story. You've got to put in the energy. You've got to have the mindset. You've got to have the focus. We want those players. So it can be, I think it's important. In the past, we had a lot of inquiries where people would be frustrated. We only take club players. We don't just take club players to be exclusive or this or that. It's also about your child's confidence. If you bring a player that is in rec and they are 13 years old to one of our sessions, they're going to walk out of there with a lack of confidence, not loving their gameplay, and not proud of themselves. It's not because we want to eliminate these people or we don't want to train them, but it's not the best case for your child to be there if they don't have a baseline of
Even on that, the reason why the reason for the club level player as well, when we go back to the roots of it, Megan, was really that we want our players to come in and have at least 2 sessions a week structured practice by a professional team environment. It's not going to be if you've got a dad running a session on a, and that's it, I'm saying some amazing dad coaches. I've literally seen it myself, some amazing recreational coaches. But for us, it's the environment that's associated with, and maybe they're playing 2 games on a weekend. So for us, it's just more of a dedication to, this should be for me, if you're in my session, this should be your main extracurricular activity that you're focusing in on. That's really, if we're getting down the bottom line, but that's what I expect. And I obviously, a lot of other players, they're also young, and there's the, what's American culture, to sample some session or sample some other sports, right? But which is different for me. But you've got to, I understand that. But for me, if you're in our sessions, this should be your, for one, your passion, but also like your main extracurricular activity that you're wanting to work towards, and you're putting in the supplemental training. Your parents have made a commitment paying for you to be at a session that is for your benefit of your main extracurricular activity.
You touched on something, and I struggle as a parent because I know how the world of North Texas soccer is. It is a dog-eat-dog world. You hit it right on the head, Megan, when you talked about parents. You did well, bad this weekend in your game, but they didn't do well in their game for whatever reason. The match did not go the way the parents saw it. And I also go back to the mindset, and we have this conversation in our home a lot. And you guys said you don't take any players and you guys strictly take clubs. I think what the angle you guys are getting at is trying to get to the level of players where they're all at the same level at least starting point. And it's much easier having the same starting point or same expectation, the same hunger, especially at the older age groups. I think the younger age groups, it's parent, more parent driven. I'm guilty of this. My son had his first private lesson at 6 years old, and it was learned how to be physical, because he went from the rec environment to the club environment. We hired someone to teach him how to use his body. That's what we hired the guy, the trainer, to do. And he ended up working with that coach for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I think parents need to take a step back and realize, what is it for? Is it for them, or is it for their player? And I think when you start looking at little Johnny, little Susie on the pitch, and looking at how parents perceive their kids, I know I'm guilty. Like I said, earlier I said, I'm biased. He's my kid. But at the same time, I also have been told this is the level he needs to be playing at. And let me tell you, it hurt as a parent. But at the same time, they weren't wrong. It was my ego that was hurt. It wasn't in the best interest for first Landon. It was in the best interest of what I wanted him to be at. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's making sure they're in the right environment. You've talked about this several times and throughout the whole thing. It's finding that right coach, that right environment, that right positivity for the player, and that right connection. And that's one thing. And I'm not going to defend this, Greg, because as a parent, I don't hunt by the level of play of the team. I'm hunting by the coach.
Yep.
I truly, right now, Landon is 10. I don't care if the team loses every single game. As long as he's going out there and the environment he's learning in is high. You've seen Landon play, and I'm very fortunate to have this interview because you've seen him play. Yep. Mm-hmm. And you know the level he plays at, and you know his hunger. And that's the word Megan used earlier. It is the hunger of the player. And what level is that hunger? And I think that dictates that leveling that you talked about earlier, because a player can have all the skill set in the world, can do all the Maradonas, can do all the pullbacks. But if the hunger to actually go use those skill sets aren't there, it's very hard for them to develop. So looking at your skill sessions now, do you take those skills? And this is something I heard recently, and they talked about how to incorporate the skills they're learning in a private session. And this is where the conversation came from. And I know I'm off tangent from where you guys are at now, but my train of thought with this is where it's at. I'm sorry. Is that you talked about the play, practice, play model. Now, I heard if you teach a skill set, so if you're teaching them scissors or whatever it may be, and they don't use it within 10 minutes of you finishing that portion of your session and use it in a game-like environment, so you're going back to the play part of play, practice, play, they will lose it. They won't ever be able to use it on Saturday or Sunday in the match. And how do you incorporate that into your sessions then? Because I've seen it. I'm going to let you describe it.
Greg, last night was perfect. Last night's example was perfect.
I try and do the first thing I'll have it with a group will be, it might be an unopposed skill, right? But this also blends in with my personal personality as well, right? So I'll teach a skill unopposed where there is no way that they are going to get the ball stolen from them in that moment. Now, I will get them to do that maybe repetition, maybe probably for 2-3 minutes. And they'll do that and I will give them the technical corrections whilst they're in that. After that, then we immediately go from that moment where they're maybe doing the move against a mannequin or they're doing it free play dribbling. They'll then have an opponent that's trying to steal the ball. Now, I might even put another step in there where they might have semi-opposed, whereas what I'll do is I'll have a player like run in and we all call it like shadow press, where like they'll stand in front, but they're not going to actually poke the ball away. But for me, that gives a more realistic where that player is actually maybe in a defensive stance moving, maybe they're jockeying and coming backwards so that there is realistic, like it's not no longer a mannequin that's an inanimate object anymore. It's someone that's moving back and they're getting the spacing correct. From that, fully opposed. And we'll go into that. And that genuinely happens in every single drill. Maybe there will be something that's unopposed that will then be quick progressed into an activity where they then have opposition. And I try and do that with every single drill almost that we do. The ball mastery sort of piece goes maybe for the first 15 minutes. But for that, we'll go into the 1v1s. And if we are working on a move, for instance, if it is a scissor, it might be something more complicated than that. It could be maybe a combination of skill moves within one. we then are going to put them right from that in the 1v1 situation. As soon as they maybe go past a certain line, but they go past a certain cone, then they're into the 1v1, and then we'll quickly progress it. Do you know what I actually think I have as well? You know, I was laughing. Someone was just saying, I think I've got a TikTok brain now too. I go into, as soon as I get a, I do a drill, I like to do it, and I like to think from a kid's perspective. See, if I do this for 30 minutes and it's unopposed, and it's or you do the same, it bores me. So I'm like, all right, we've got 10 stations, we've got 7 stations here, or we've got 6 stations here, we've got 1 hour to do it. We're going to go through each and every element of that. Every station has something slightly different, but they might be able to use that move within, or that sequence of movements within multiple environments. And I also like the part of the teaching moment for me is, all right, for instance, I see people do the wrong, like a wrong move, or maybe they'll do a step over when they were like, well, hold on, you're wanting to go forward here in this moment. Why would you do that one? So I like to have the teaching moment, the why behind any sort of like skill movement like that. Why would you do it then? Or what would be an effective movement to do at that moment? So yeah, that's part of it. But I actually really like that, where I try my best actually not to have long drawn out moments of unopposed activity. I like to get them into 1v1s because I think that's exciting part of it. 1v1s though are very taxing on them, so you have to maybe sometimes well break it up. But yeah, that's actually, I actually really like that. Another thing I like to say about my coaching journey myself, I'm not a guru. I've still got a lot to learn, and I'm learning every day. And I love what part of my passion is, I love to go on there. Site, maybe it's Books for Coaches or YouTube, and I'll get a session, and maybe I like to switch up my minimum sessions quite regularly, even if it's a few drills, and maybe add in a different element to it. And I find that out every day, and I love to learn. I want to develop what PD1 is right now. I'm always tinkering with it. How could this be better? And I'm very self-critical, and I sometimes will talk to Megan about that in Chile, but it's actually, we're in a great business partnership with this as well, where she'll sometimes say to me, maybe just, you know, maybe demo it a bit more or show them a bit more, because I don't know if they're going to get that, or maybe that individual maybe might need a little bit more there. I'm not going to get, as a coach, I'm not going to get butthurt about that. I'm going to go, yeah, maybe that individual needs a bit more. So I'm very self-critical about that myself, and I like to be like that too with the coaches I work with as well. Maybe we don't want anyone standing around. No one standing around. They got to get into it quick.
I do think there's an element in there too of, again, my educator past coming in and all of the training I've done on child development and how they learn and how they process. And we can have some players out there where sometimes I think there is a benefit of me being able to say to Greg, hey, that kid can do this skill. They're not processing this auditorily as well as they should. Now, Greg does do, he explains it and he demos it. And as a teacher, a trainer, whether you're in a classroom or on a field, demoing different types of ways that kids can process this is very important. But there are also times where I can stand there and Greg's got his 7 players in there, and there's this one that's just not getting it. And I can a lot of times look over at him and be like, hey, I think this one's not processing what you're saying, not necessarily the inability for the skill. And I do think Greg and I are a good pair on being able to do that, or post session being able to discuss things. Like I can go in and say, hey, I think that yesterday was great too. You really, with this particular group we had out there, were struggling with the skill. And he realized, he's wait, I need to stop and really slow this down. Yes, in my head, my session plan pattern was boom, 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 but I need to stop, slowly demo it. And you know what? It was crazy. All the kids got it. They got it at their own paces, their own scale, but he was able to evaluate, stop, and see how he could really, even in a group session, work to individualize what they needed.
That's why we max it at 10. I like to be able to make sure that no one's standing around at any point in my session. I think that's why I've got a lot of compliments from that, is my time management with everything that I do within my sessions is, kids are going to get a lot of reps within that session, whatever we do. And that's why people wouldn't believe me. It takes me, you see the setup every day, it takes me about over an hour to, you know, almost 2 hours to set up, because I don't want anyone waiting around. So there's that same drill, I might replicate it twice, so that at least there's like, all right, even if there is maybe one kid getting some rest ratio, then the other two are working. They're back in, they grab the ball, they're back at it again for the next one. And another FC Dallas coach gave me a nice session, or sorry, a nice compliment last week, where in our sessions, he's like, they were on the ball. They took a couple of breaks where they got a couple of water breaks for 20, 30 seconds. the rest of the session, they were on the ball. They had a ball at their feet. And I take pride in that because every time we do, we like to include a ball. And we might do some warm-up activities or agility activities for a quick warm-up or activation. But for the most part, everything's 99% with the ball. Well, and some touches and they're getting... Go ahead.
Something I really appreciate as a co-owner and business partner of Greg is that it's, I appreciate and I don't, because I'm there for setup too and I get frustrated. I'm like, why are we setting up this much? But Greg is like, I don't want to have a moment. If a session's not working, I want to pivot. If I need more time or different areas, Greg is extremely thoughtful, puts a lot of thought into how these sessions are going to run and be effective for the player. And I appreciate that because there, it does take an extra amount of effort to put that in. But he's always aware of, I don't want these kids standing around. And if a session isn't, if a drill isn't working the way that it needs to work, I want to adapt. I want to be able to go on to this variation of that same thing that might be more effective. And that takes a lot of planning and that takes a lot of extra time, even in setup. There's, I can't tell you how many times this happens and I'm watching it because I'm the one helping set up and I'm primarily the one who cleans up the field as we go. And I know when a drill has not been used the entire session and I'm like, oh, that's so annoying. But
we also work with, also it's multiple. When you think about it, we have, say on a Friday night, we have four age groups. I can't expect a 2016 to do what a 2011 is doing. So I need to have other adaptable drills to be able to facilitate that same learning outcome. I want to be able to make sure that they can get that. Now, that might be something that looks a little bit different, or maybe there's another. But what I also try to do as well is have a goal involved in a lot of my activities. For me, as a player, if I had seen a goal, I could be doing something. I might have to do some sort of a ball mastery, but if it was a goal at the end of it, like I'm gonna be more enthusiastic. So I try and add a goal in as much as I can as well. And within that goal, then there's obviously going to be a defender in a 1v1 moment. I think a lot. What I like about my sessions is, as well, when I think about it, is when I was their age, would I want to do this? Would I be enthusiastic to do this set, this drill? Or is it just mind-numbing? Is it like, oh, A passes to B, moves to point C? Or is it, no, there actually is a goal involved in it too? For me, that's fun. Already you got me more enthusiastic about that activity. I try and make it as, even though there's a lot of learning involved and there's maybe a lot of like mental processing with some of the skill movements and challenges that I'm giving them, I want it to be fun. And for me, it's like boom, boom, boom. They go from different activities. But at the end, they're going to finish maybe the 3v3 or a 1v1 transition into a bigger space. For me, I just want to make sure it's the most positive environment that they, maybe they go away from our sessions and they're more enthusiastic about the sport as a whole.
I think too about our sessions, just talking about them, what's really unique about the way that Greg has planned this, his kind of methodology behind it and everything, is that there is structure, consistency, and there is freedom and creativity. So when you come out to our field every day, for anybody who's never been to one of our sessions, you will see a huge field filled up by multiple drills. And I'm sure, like, as speaking, if you hadn't been there, some of what we just said wouldn't make sense. But you have a very defined ball mastery or agility area. It goes into turns, it goes into each. And he works from the beginning, just station to station around the field till he ends in that 3v3 game or whatever it is at the end that is putting all of those skills in. And I think what that does too for a child's brain is that they're not stuck on one thing for 20 minutes. He is very particular about his time. You will watch him. At this point, he didn't even note. It's like his brain just knows, okay, we've been doing this long enough. And the kids also appreciate that structure, but then they also get the creative freedom to do some of that free play in there as well. But I think the structure is a very unique, nice structure for kids to both have a positive learning environment and get their skills, get all the elements they need in. But I guess a listener who has never seen the way we operate, it would be, I think it's quite impressive when you walk out to our field versus maybe some other training. You're going to see a massive classroom of ways that your child can develop their skills.
I think parents normally just think of sessions or private sessions as a few cones set out with an individual. I know that you and there's a few others in the Metroplex that actually have a whole program set up. They already go through it. They already have the week plan. Greg, when I coached 5 and 6 year olds, I probably spent 16 hours a week planning for my 2 1-hour sessions every week, researching, trying to figure out, going back and going through my notes and trying to figure out what I can help the players I have work on, build off from the previous week, what they struggled with within the match and going forward. So I get what you're saying. And yes, you lay out a lot of cones, do a lot of setup, and some of it might never get used because whatever reason that week, their minds can't wrap around whatever you're trying to show them, or you can't explain it well enough to them. And then you have to, like you said, you pivot and try something else to build back to that point. And I don't think a lot of parents appreciate that or understand that train of thought of having to pivot and having your whole entire session trashed because you're trying to get to a certain point across.
Mm-hmm. There's that. And there's also, we do try really hard. Our app has cutoff times when you can join a session and not and all that. And something I think that we have really good clients. We have really amazing, loyal, understanding clients. I'd say in the last 18 months, we've had virtually no issues. There's very few I can think of, if any. But I think something that is would be nice for parents to understand in general is when you are attending a skills session, there's a reason that those cutoff times are there, and there's a reason that cancellation is not allowed after a time. It's not always just about running a business, revenue, and money. We plan the sessions for certain numbers, and when suddenly those numbers either drop or raise, it can greatly affect the session. Because we've had moments where we've had people actually just show up, and we're like, whoa, you need to let us know. And the reason isn't just, hey, either I had one parent say to me one time, she said, are you just not going to take my money then? And I said, no, I'm not going to take your money. We've got a system that we need to go through. And primarily it's because we've got X amount of players in there and we've planned that session for that. So I think sometimes it's not understood how much planning does go into these sessions. I think that is something important.
In terms of like, for me with that, Megan, and that's why I was the one probably complaining to you at the start was like, hey, I've planned this for 6, but 10 has turned up. It said it was 6 on the app, but whenever I started coaching at 3, by the time it's 7 o'clock, I haven't been on the phone. The phone says in the car up until I get off the field. Now there's 10, so I'm now adapting my own session within that, whereas I like to be meticulous about, all right, there's 4 in this in the 6 p.m. This is the types of drills that I want to be implementing for those players. And it could be also, I'll look at the list of who's coming, and if it's more advanced players, maybe I'll be able to do some more advanced drills, or if it's players that might be a little bit more foundational, then there's also something I want to get out of that. So it is important for us that we do have that sort of structure as well, where I'll know, all right, you've got a couple of hours before. Now, I will also sometimes throw in some progressions where, all right, if someone else does come, then I'll be able to swing and adapt. And obviously, like you were saying before, about you sometimes have to pivot. It comes with experience. But the joy of my coaching journey is I've literally coached all levels as well. I've coached at recreational. I've coached 3-year-olds. I've coached IDP players I've coached players up in college environments. I've coached high-level high school players. I've coached your regular club teams. So I think I've got a vast experience of dealing with a lot of different age groups. And I still sometimes will take the 4-year-old sessions and stuff. I'll go back to that. But I feel like my experience has helped me be able to realize, all right, I don't know if the sounds of same over here, just beat a dead horse with a drill, right? But they're going to keep going as long as you can until they get it. Maybe there's a coach, and there's some phenomenal coaches that I've learned from as well, that I've been able to, maybe it is just how you say something. Maybe it is just how you demo something that just gets that kid to learn that. I've even sometimes been like, I'm showing them, but they're just not clicking. Getting up on YouTube and going, here's an FC Dallas player. They've changed direction in this way. And next thing, maybe they'll get it.
You have to understand sometimes maybe they're not getting it because it's us. It's what we're saying or doing.
I have that accent too somewhere.
Sometimes I've looked over at him and I'm like, hey, if they're all not getting it, let's think about this. But I do want to say one thing on the sessions and everything is we really do daily individualized sessions based on the roster a lot of times. And so it is really important because I think that's a benefit. I'm not sure all training companies, I think a lot of times they just say, this is what we're doing this week. And there's not a lot of adaptation. There's not a lot of difference, but we do put pride in looking at a roster and adapting that session. Even if we, like I just said, we've laid out this equipment, I'm hot and I'm tired and I'm done laying the equipment out. And he's looking at the roster. He's like, nope, this is not going to work for this particular group with the people signed up today. Even though we may have three ball mastery 1v1s going, he's going to go, oh, I'm looking at this particular roster. It's not going to work. I'm going to add a drill back here just in case. And I think that's really important. I think that's important that he does that. I think it adds a lot of value to our program. But then on the backside, if those numbers fluctuate or change in any way, it can mess it up. So it's like you want an individualized session, but we also have to be as like when I'm signing up my daughter, and sometimes it's even me, like my daughter will come or I'll have to say to Greg last minute, I'm sorry, she can't come. Like I get it from a parent. So I'm definitely not saying, but our clients are very respectful. They've learned if they're not going to come, let us know. And we appreciate that. That goes a long way because we are working really hard for your kids to make sure each and every session is advantageous to each player in the session.
Yeah. Ian as well, I think earlier on, I guess what we forgot to mention as well with our programming, I mentioned that we, the types of class we do within a group session, but we also, a lot of, that's probably, you know, 60 or 70% of what we do is the groups, but we also do a lot of semi-privates, group team privates, one-to-ones. We don't probably do as many one-to-ones anymore. I don't typically, sometimes a lot of the times the 1v1s will go to some of our other coaches. And we also have a goalkeeping program going on with an amazing trainer on a Friday night with who also works at Sting, Coach Adam. But we, for us, like sometimes players will typically not age out of our sessions, but around 14, 15, they end up having a lot of other conflicts within their own schedule, school-wise, and maybe they're traveling a lot. If they're playing on an ECNL team, maybe they're traveling every other week and they're maybe they're resting or they've got three practices a week already themselves. But what we typically see from around end of 14.
13, yeah, about 13.
They started then, maybe they'll organize. I think there's about four groups that we work with now, three solar groups, FC Dallas group, that come to me specifically, and it's their team. So it might be like not their home team, it might be eight players out of that team come. And now that session themselves, I don't actually deal with the coaches as such. I have dealt with some coaches like the FC Dallas coach Garrett, but there's another, sometimes some of the parents will collaborate together and be like, hey, this is what we're seeing. They struggle with creativity, they struggle with combination play, struggling with like finishing crosses or like finishing, or it could be even just a skills sort of ball mastery issue. And we will, so that is really tailored to the conversations with the clients. And that also happens recurring as well. Every week I'll be like, hey, guys, I've planned your session today. I've got a lot of it's possession based or a lot of it's technical, ball mastery, technical work or whatever. Or maybe they'll say, hey, can we do a bit of work on some crossing or some cutbacks today? And we will then, and I'll just implement that into the session because we want to tailor it to, you know, that team. And that those actually, we would love to do more of those ourselves. They really provide, I feel like, a great supplement to their team work because if their coach, and I've been there myself, sometimes parents say, oh, we're not working on this. It's hard to get through as a coach as well. It's very hard to get through. Like, you've got your methodology of play, maybe you're working on building out of the back. That's sometimes difficult to get a lot of some technical work in if you're doing a passing drill there, or you're playing out within an opposed sort of structure to work on building out of the back or building into the middle third or creativity in the attacking third. Sometimes some players might not be getting the technical work that they need, where if they come together, even as a group of four or six or eight or 10, we're then able to come up with a set. I come up with a session that's going to be beneficial for them as a supplement to their team practice. We love doing them as well.
Now, I look at training sessions depending on the program. Do you guys look at the player as a whole? Do you just look at the technical side of the game? Or do you guys have a blend of what you guys are working with the players?
Definitely a hybrid. I think a lot of the skills that I'll teach in a technical perspective, I like to put in the why. Why would we do this? What are we trying to get out of this? Okay, so it's to off-balance that opponent so that we can then take a touch, a playaway touch in another direction and get some separation from that opponent at that moment. Now, I like to try and break it down as the why in everything we do is the why. So like there, it might not be tactically where I guess sometimes I will. For instance, some of the times we'll do in our shooting and finishing drills, where we'll do activities where maybe they're shooting from the right, but even if they are right-footed player, like I always play right midfield or I'm a right D. I know for a fact that whenever I had players, I would play inverted winger sometimes, and I would tell my left mids if they're a right-footed player, cut in. I want you cutting in and combine them with the forwards. Or so I'll also there will be some sort of tactical elements with the two, but for the most part, I like the. Really just dissect the technical game and really help them with, give them the, show them what it looks like, how can it be better, how can we make that a little bit cleaner, even with their movements, their balance. And then, yeah, we do include the why as well. So that's, I guess we would do a hybrid as such, but I also, I'm not stepping on other coaches' toes. If I go out to watch a player, I'm not saying coach should be playing three at the back or you should be playing as a centre mid. It's not my job to do. I want to be able to support coaches. A lot of these coaches that I go out and watch, I've built up a lot of friendships within coaches and throughout the DFW area, which has worked out well for both sides. They know that us not being a club, we're club neutral. I'm not taking their players, coaches can feel comfortable with coming out to PD1. Greg's not saying, oh, your coach is doing this, or why is he not doing this? I'm there to help. I want to be able to develop their game and send them back to their clubs where maybe they are a little bit more technically proficient. And those relationships with the coaches have really helped us within business as well, because a lot of them will send out multiple players to us to get that technical work that they need to come back to them. And then they work on the technical the tactical elements. And this comes around. Every tryout season is so busy for club coaches, even for a skills coach as well. But I think people would be surprised at how involved that people come to me all the time. Well, what have you heard about this program? What have you heard about this club? What have you heard about this? Hey, we're looking for it. And I've sent a lot of players over to other clubs. Only if they come to me, I would never like direct anyone anywhere. But a lot of times parents ask me they consult me for advice of what
I was going to say. It's the advice that you're consulted, yeah. And then you are really good at knowing, since we see so many players from so many different clubs, he has an easier way to look at, okay, I know that this team might be a good fit for this player. Looking at it, it has nothing to do with the club, the coach, or this, or maybe it does. Maybe it has to do with that kid's learning style and knowing that coach. We do work extremely hard on staying club neutral as best as we can. We don't bias towards any club or anything like that. It's very important to us, for the coaches who send the kids out to us, to have trust in us as the skills trainer. We need that trust in that relationship. It's not in our benefit whatsoever to not have that with any club or any coach.
I think you're right. I think being exposed to different styles of players and players' style where they are being coached, you get to see the dynamic of where player A might benefit being in this environment if a parent's asking for an opinion. Like I said, like I don't hunt the badge on the kit, yeah, or the label on the sleeve. I'm hunting who's going to develop my player at this age. Okay. Because like I said, my son's 10. We have five more years before it switches to it's about winning, and yeah, 4 or 5 years before winning is the ultimate goal. And if he doesn't have that foundation, it doesn't matter what the coach is or where, if he doesn't have the right learning environment. So you guys staying neutral is key. That's one thing I did write down. I like that you guys talked about everyone wears PD1 gear. And I think that's key because it takes the club element out of it and makes everyone an equal. And I don't think parents, as much as a parent myself, being required to buy a shirt and having these conversations now with other skills coaches, it really distinguishes the difference between who everyone is and what they're doing, and it really eliminates the club element out of the equation, not just for you guys but for the players. Because not to mean, but if a player finds out you're playing for XX club and they're at this level, whatever level it may be in the alphabet leagues, it might be intimidating for a player. Yeah. And coming into it, they may be at the same level. They may even be better than that player. But knowing that they're at that level, playing on that team, can really be intimidating for especially younger players, because the mind is such a wonderful thing at that age for these players. Knowing they play for this club, they play at this level. But at the end of the day, I'll be honest, I've seen ECNL teams. I love bashing ECNL, and don't get me wrong, I don't mean to, but I tend to do it quite a bit. You have these players that play in ECNL, and honestly, they deserve to be playing in rec still. Yep. And it's really hard to say that. But that's at every level. You'll see that with these clubs and leagues. And that like having the jersey, the kit, the shirt, or kit, whatever you want to call it, to make it a level playing field psychologically speaking is great.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of friendships between players build as well. There's a lot of kids that come out now and they are in totally different teams, but they're friends, or they're so excited because I'm on the side, and they'll come out and they'll be like, oh, you're here. When they don't play together, they're not teammates, but they have an opportunity to play together and become, and it's
really nice to see, isn't it? Yeah. And don't get me wrong, there is some sessions that we've ran before where one, which is really nice as a, but one teammate has come out and tried us out. They've really liked it. They've went back to their team. The parents have talked along the sidelines. Next week, we have four players in that one team or in our session. So that does happen too. Not like created that way, or it's not like sometimes it's just word of mouth and people are there, which is great. But like, just going back to what you were saying there, Ian, like for me, like the badge on the side, I just can't, like so even the tryout stages, I see it and I hear parents said, I'm only interested if they're playing on, but it's an RL team or they've tried out with three RL teams. I know it's hard to say at the tryout stages, but if you're not going to get game time at these environments, I always just say, what's the game time situation going to look like? And not that you want to be there. Yeah, obviously having competition for places is important too in that environment, but I just like, if you're signing up for a team, I just have no idea why you would do it. Why you're going into a team environment where you know you're not going to play, or you're not going to, you're probably on the lower end of maybe the talent pool, and you're probably going to be third choice. Maybe you're talking, you're going to get 15, 20 minutes a game. I don't see how that's going to help. And I've even had experience with that myself as a player. Whenever I was always very small player, and I'm still small myself now. Like, but if I wasn't playing, my dad would be the first one to tell me, you need to be challenging, you need to get more game time here. You're not going to improve if you're not playing. You're better on a bench.
To your point, Ian, too, about the people saying their level or what they are, Greg and I have experienced multiple times. We'll get a contact, an inquiry from someone, and they will say, we play on this pre-ECNL team, we're this, this, and this, where, you know, and they come out to us, and as you say, you're shocked at the play. And so I feel like we have this like way of being able to see where we're at. That does not matter. You need to be asking. That's when we started, probably about a year ago, that we started saying, I don't give me any of that. What coach do you play for? That was more indicative to us on the player coming out to do that pre-evaluation than it was if you tell me I'm so-and-so, I play pre-ECNL for this club. They can come out and that means nothing. What we started to learn was, what coach do you play for? The only reason I need to know the club associated is so that if there's two Martinez's, I know which one you're playing for.
Yeah.
That is where Greg and I have been able to evaluate more than anything else on a player, because the rest of it doesn't seem to translate. And I wish more parents knew that. It would save them a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of driving distance, because so many parents will pay a ton of money, drive really far, sacrifice a lot of time, and that is not it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And like Greg said, their playing time isn't there. Another thing on the club neutrality as well is we've had quite a few people ask, because we have such a big field space, if they can sub-rent from us field space. And Greg and I have always been really big on, it's not that we don't want to help you, but if I allow a club to come out there and run some practices, then what happens to me? I'm suddenly associated with that club. Would it benefit me financially? Yeah, probably, because the players that are coming out to that practice will see what we do and they'll want to put their kids in. But we are so focused on staying club neutral, because we see anytime, and we've had some other clients come to us lately about other training academies that are forming teams, and they're saying, we don't go there anymore because now our coach is afraid they're going to start wanting our players. You've got to keep those separate so that you continue to build that player, coach, trainer trust.
Yeah. Same regarding everything, tryout seasons as well. Last year, multiple individuals have contacted me and been like, hey, would you consider taking on another team? Would you come back and just do even take one team for us? And for me, I say no, primarily because I have a sole focus with my own business, but I want to make sure that coaches are they are comfortable with them, with their players coming with me working with them. I know that I haven't got any, you know, motives to, you know, get them into my academy or this, or maybe with some associations that maybe that happens a bit or so I've heard. But I like to stick to make sure that coaches are going to be comfortable with where they're coming in and they're going to get training, and I want to send them back to that club better prepared technically.
I like that. My other side, my last question I have for the player side of it is, do you have insight, and this is a big issue to me, the mindful side of the game for these players? Because you talk about being positive, which is a huge thing. You talk about playing free and being creative, but the mindful side feeds into those other three things right there. And do you help with that at all, or do you give guidance to help them? I mean, being positive goes such a long way, especially with the younger ages, because you can build their confidence and build what they're doing. Everything else seems to click later on, or later on that week or in the games. Do you guys focus on anything else, or do you guys just try to keep your positive message in your training sessions and move forward?
I think definitely, like, I've had instances like where I've taken kids from a private training perspective, and or they've been out in our groups. I know I'll not name names, but there's a couple of parents that have reached out to me personally and been like, hey, "There's confidence is down. The coaches been on them. That performance isn't really going well." And I've zoomed the kid, or I've talked to FaceTime the kid, and went, "Hey, listen, like, how can we help you here? What can we?" And I've talked through it. Even kids back in New York, I used to coach. Parents have still done it. And I do, again, not that I've got any sort of like knowledge that the parents don't have. Like, you know, sometimes just hearing a different voice can, and that definitely, I feel like even though we are an academy where players come in and they go back to their clubs, I don't think that we're the type that we don't just leave them alone. Like, I'm always communicating with coaches. Megan's right. Like, every week, on a Sunday night, I love it. We get a lot of texts. Hey, look what they've done today. Look what we've done. And for us, it's a progression of they've shown us the commitment, but we're also giving that back. And that goes for the mindset thing as well. I feel like for us, we do try and prepare them in certain ways where I guess, like, I will give my own personal experiences, even when I'm in the middle of my coaching. I'll say, hey, guys, I've previously got frustrated with this, or I can see why this can be an issue. Or sometimes, I don't know, I think what we do in our sessions too, even though we try and influence positivity. But let me just say this. So, like, yesterday, for instance, in my session, I said that my group sentence for today, attention to detail. And what I meant by that was, are you just going through these drills and going through, is it okay if you took it on the wrong foot, or it went over a cone, or you took it too far away? Or can you, like, have that attention to detail that really is going to set you apart, not just in soccer, but really in other things as well? If we didn't have attention to detail and kids just kind of, I know we wouldn't be as successful if me and Megan didn't have the attention to detail that we are passionate about for creating an amazing program. So just little things they got, I feel like that might prepare them, where maybe in a school sort of environment where you're like, you're giving them a bit more than just soccer, like, maybe that might go a little bit further.
To add to that, I don't have the athletic mindset training or experience. Being at the gate, which is our door, when kids walk in, there's a lot of opportunities even for myself to be able to say, how was your game this weekend? What did you do? And you can gauge where they're at the moment they come in. And a lot of times, especially the female players that we have, they'll come in and I'll know that off the field, it has nothing to do with soccer, there's something going on. And you just sit there and you just talk to them for those first few minutes while they're doing their juggles, or while they're warming up, or while they're... And I think sometimes that opens their mind for the learning, that opens their mind to leave it back. You build those relationships with these players. You don't have to be the actual trainer in that moment to influence them. And we've got a younger player that's really skilled, really good, but she's very hard on herself. And she came in recently, told me about her tough game. And I was able to really say, hey, listen, you're a great player, but you've got to get out of your mind. You're only as great as your mind is going to allow you to be. If you can't handle a loss, you're not going to meet your goals, because losing it's part of it. It's part of the game. It's part of life. It's part of everything. You need to begin to learn to handle loss, handle that your players on your team are not always going to be the best. They're going to make mistakes too. And I don't have this massive background in athletics, but you still know how to help a child and open them and be there for them. Watch their personality when they walk in, watch their shoulder stance, watch those things, and be a person of influence to him. Hey, get out there and do your best. There's a lot of times, even when we're there and I'm out there and he's focused on it, that I'll connect with a kid on the side whenever I watch them frustrated or whatever it is. And I do believe that a village is there. And at our program, we provide multiple ways to help those kids with their mindset. And he's always available for the mindset stuff off the field as well, because I think we can all agree that's half the battle in this day and age with kids, 2024, they're exposed to so much. They believe that they're supposed to be exactly like this person they see on Instagram. They're the best player. They're everything. And we've got to bring it just to reality to these kids a lot, that what they're seeing and viewing all the time is not reality. Mistakes are reality. Imperfection is reality.
I think that was the one thing I wanted to say as well. But Megan, actually, so you just touched on that. I just want to have one more point there about it being a development, and I truly believe that a lot of our players, but we're not possessive over anything. I see other individuals or trainers or whatever, and they get possessive about a player or being a certain player. It takes a village. I've realized that through my soccer journey, it's been a village. And I also think that a lot of the players that come into us, they go to other training facilities and academies. For me, that's great, because you know what? A lot of voices are going to give you a lot of different perspectives, and I think that's going to be effective for development in the long run, holistic. We're not possessive over any sort of player. We like that. In fact, we've even said sometimes to certain individuals that have been training them for a long time, maybe switch it up. Some players that have came to me for a while, sometimes I see them sign up for Coach Mo, which is phenomenal for us, because I'm like, well, they enjoy his sessions also. One thing that we like about that, though, also is that we think that we're going to be doing a good job, and is that a lot of players always come back, and they always come back and they have positive things to say about us. But yeah, definitely takes a village. And if anything, I really sometimes like to remind myself that, yeah, you're going to train, it's great to have multiple experiences.
My last favorite question to ask. So I'll have Megan go first, and I'll have Greg go second. So for my first favorite question, because you are much like me, Megan, you don't have a soccer pedigree.
Yeah, right. I do.
So what has been your greatest influence? I'll put it as a parent and a business owner in the soccer world for you. Who has been those people in your life that have been the greatest influence on you?
As far as soccer, are you saying?
As far as your business side and the soccer side that you can give a shout out to that have helped you.
Well, that's going to sound so weird. It's Craig. He's taught me. He has given me that understanding in which I didn't have. And I think from a business side of it, we follow some international coaches. There's one that we follow. Maybe you can cut out everything I just said. And probably I have to learn somewhere. So I had to learn a lot of this stuff from Greg on the side of soccer. But one thing that he exposed me to early on was this guy out in Australia. His company is Jonah Football. And I watched a lot of what he did, and although I didn't know a lot of the soccer stuff that was going on, I could tell he ran a solid business. And I could tell he had to have methods and he had to have organization and that background to be able to run the business as he did. And then I went off of the football program he ran, and I went into his personal and I started following him personally to see, okay, what is this guy's life like? Because I'm actually interested that as a business owner, I'm more interested in what are your stories, the stories he would share about what his day-to-day life was more attractive and appealing to watch, because I could see how my day was and how it would and how he could influence me on a business background, organizational standpoint. So I would say that would be one person that I found influential at the beginning. I looked at him and what he did and was like, we can do that. I believe in what Greg has and his potential that we could become this guy for North Texas. And so I would say he's a benchmark, a bar for me to model, or how I would market Greg. I guess that would be a great way. It's because a lot of my job is marketing Greg. And it is now at this point I get to market Mo, and that's fun. But for us to grow, I've got to market Greg effectively. What did this guy Jonah do? How did he market himself? How did he grow the way he's grown? So he was really influential to me in looking at what I can do and how I can transform our program into something very similar. He was very brand aware as well. So I would say, what do you say, Greg?
Going for me, my biggest probably influence was one of my old PE teachers, my friend, John Spancy. For me, he was just the one. For me, I was like, I wanted to work in soccer. I wanted to work in full-time football. And that was over me picking any other sort of career. And probably sometimes look back now and be a soccer coach and drive a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. But you've got a lifestyle that I really love. Is just, I love being involved in the day-to-day is with the ball. And that was my biggest thing at the start, was I really wanted a full-time career in soccer. So it was, and that was because of John Spence. But for me, since now we've moved into being a kind of more, I feel like I'm more than a, I like to say I'm more than a soccer coach just now. I feel like I'm an entrepreneur. The amount of dealings I've had in business now working with Megan, some of the programs that I really respect across the globe, almost a lot of them are actually, some of them aren't based in the States. And so we don't really look towards any, I don't think I look towards any other sort of, for inspiration, anyone like kind of locally or anything. I look towards, yeah, Jonah out in Australia, what he does. I love his drills. I love the personality that comes through on some of the social media, which we try to implement as well and create a fun environment on our social media. Tom Owens is another one in the UK. I just think he runs a phenomenal program. But I love that there's a community element to what he does. Coach Michael out in California. And Joe, what's nice is that as our social media has grown through Megan's work, creating a lot of our reels, we've actually had some of these guys follow us back, and I've even communicated with some of them, which for me has been great, and just networking in that way. So for us, we want to do the best job we can do for our clients. Everyone's anticipation or opinions on who's the best or what's the best. We want to do what we can do for our program and make ours the best is what we can do. And we've definitely got a long way to go as well. I want to level up everything that we have in terms of it's.
So I think going off of soccer, this is completely random, but on an entrepreneur level, because that's where I'm at. That's where I excel. That's where for years I stayed at home after I taught. For 10 years, I stayed at home. All through that period of time, I wanted something more. I didn't really want to stay home, but I had reasons I needed to stay home. So through that process, I sought things. I tried to do my own thing, but I never, ever had a product. I didn't ever have a product that I could use what I felt like I had a talent to actually build a business and make money. Throughout this time, I have a friend, her husband, his name is Dan. He started his own company. He did the grind. He worked really hard as an entrepreneur, starting a diagnostic imaging company on his own. He had a partner. They grinded. I think they ended up owning the company for 13 years. And by the end of the 13 years, they had opened 7 or 8 satellite locations or different locations within the DFW Metroplex. And watching this progression as I was friends with his wife was always super inspiring to me that this man could, he was not in the imaging industry whatsoever. He had an opportunity placed. He took his talents of growing things and he just made it happen. And so many times through our 18 months, I think of him and I think of how he did it, because our dreams right now were PD1 right here, South Lake, Texas. But Greg and I have dreams way down the road. How can we implement what we've created? This is so easy for someone to come along. It just takes two people. It takes a talented trainer and it takes somebody willing and dedicated to understand the backside of business. It is completely possible for locations all over, PD1 locations all over the United States to take this model and do it. And I look at my friend Dan Belcher and I'm like, he did it. He did it all locally to the point where the US Radiology Association, some big domestic company, bought him out. Like that to me is goals. That's entrepreneurship. That's like watching somebody from the sidelines hustle like that, seeing what he's done, seeing what he built, seeing where he came from to what he ended with. That's also really influential to me. I'm very early in our game. We're 18 months into our game. I look at Dan's game and it ends 13 years later. And now he's on to the next investments, what he can do, but it took that hard work. And I am motivated and inspired by seeing that hard work while he raised his family, while he did all the things. Starting a business when you have kids is not easy. Starting it before you have kids you've got the time, but when you have kids and you've got a family, Dan had a family when he started this, or it was about to. He started in those young years. I just have a lot of respect for how he grew his business. His business partner relationship was always really important to me, the way that the wives got along through that. My friend and his business partner's friend, I would hear stories, and it was really inspiring to me. The way that these women supported their husbands was amazing. So for me, I guess on an entrepreneur level, that would be somebody that has really inspired me to keep going and doing what I do.
Awesome. Greg, now I'm going to switch it back to him really quickly. Greg, as a player and a coach, who those are the two different aspects, because we talked about the business side a little bit there for you. Now, as a player and a coach, who has been the greatest influence on you?
As a coach, I'm going to say when I first moved to the States, I was very lucky and fortunate to have a guy called Tim Bradbury as my coach, sort of mentor and coach educator within the company called UK Elite Soccer. For me, he was incredible, really shaped a lot of my philosophies and how I would structure sessions. I really would probably say Tim Bradbury's been a big influence, and I also done a couple of my original US licenses with him, which was very nice. In terms of a player, I'd probably say, I don't know if I would even say a professional, I'd probably say someone that I probably played alongside, a guy called Jimmy Callagher, who played, I played center mid alongside him. And it's one of those guys, whenever I see players now that come into my sessions, I'm going, I would think, what would Jimmy be like? A guy, just a kid that was just, seemingly just me, but it was almost like you were playing with an adult as a child, because he was so, like, and he ended up going on to win multiple Irish leagues, and he played in England, I think, for a bit, and he became a professional. But playing alongside someone like that, you're seeing them on their day-to-day, and whenever you're a young kid and what they were like and how influential he was in a locker room environment, for even as a young boy, just naturally having that. I would probably say Jimmy Callagher, who played for Linfield in Northern Ireland, and I'm still friends with him now, but one of those sort of individuals that when... Even I'm sure that there's multiple examples, even for Landon, as to who he's been playing alongside. But someone that's just, they're a bit different. They want it a bit differently. And they, even as a boy, inspired you. So I would probably say Jimmy Callagher for me as a player, which is probably not a player that no one's going to look up or know about. But he's been going to look him up, and he's legit. He's a good guy.
Hey everyone, I hope you all have enjoyed this two-part series with Greg and Megan. Knowing these two and getting to know them over the last year or so has been great. Greg is a great coach. He does a good job explaining, and my son really enjoys working with him. Like I have said from day one, if you're looking for a coach, you have to make sure your player connects. Greg is a good coach. The coaches he has are good coaches that connect with players. And that's what matters, is that they're able to connect. Because if they're able to connect, they're able to be successful with your players. Greg and what Megan have are phenomenal. And what they're doing kind of is different than everyone else. It's easy to connect with. It's easy to do. Easy to set up. Easy to use their app. And if you're looking for a coach and you're on the west side of town, give them a shout, give them a try, and see what happens. And you'll be amazed at what your kids can do when they have the healthy touches they need. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.